Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today, Mr. Humble, Mr. Gracious, at your service. And you're going to be glad you hung out with us a little bit longer, folks, if you've been listening already, because Joe Barker is in the building, so to speak, and he's become our good friend. He's been my hero for a long time. I've been reading Joe's words for the better part of two decades, and I began reading him when he was talking about paradigms. And I've quoted him so many times. I've used his words. We're always with attribution for so many years. Joel is one of the guys who's really changed a lot of the way I think about things over the years. And I've had the I'm very grateful that over the last year we've got to know each other. He's become a member of our brain trust, and I know that you're thankful for that too, folks. His new book is called Five Regions of the Future. And he is a futurist, and he's kind of proud to say that. Joe Barker, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim, and congratulations on your 10th anniversary.
Well, thanks. Who would have thunk it, huh?
Well, it just shows that if you do useful things and you do them well, people hang with you. And, you have really, given a steady stream of broad range of information to your listeners for 10 years, and that's a gift that's hard to, you can't find very easily on the radio spectrum.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and we sure do try around here. One of the things, somebody asked me how have I been able to do this over 10 years, be a little bitty tiny minnow in a sea of pretty big sharks. And my default answer is I didn't know I wasn't supposed to.
That's exactly right. If you don't know you're not supposed to do it, you go ahead and do it, right?
That's exactly right. I've learned some of that from you, by the way. Joe, when most of us go to work in the morning, we get up and we get ready and we drive to work or whatever, we get there, and home-based business owners just kind of walk downstairs, I guess, and we open up shop and we open our store doors and our customers come in, or we pick up the phone and we call a customer, we receive calls from a customer, we develop a product, or we turn a screw, or whatever it is we do in our lives, and most of us can imagine. When somebody says, "What do you do for a living?" and I say, "Well, I'm in the insurance, or I'm in plastics, or I'm in manufacturing, or I mow yards, or I sell tires, or whatever it might be," most of us instantaneously can say, "Oh yeah, I see how that works." But when somebody asks you what you do and you say, "I'm a futurist," what do you do when you get up and go to work in the morning?
Right. Well, when people say, "What does a futurist do?" I say, "I help people shape their own future." And that's really what I try to do, is give people tools and ways of thinking and information that makes their ability to think about their own future a little bit easier, a little bit broader, which is a really important thing these days. And so I spend a lot of time, I read 85 publications a month, and I look for things that would be significant in a broader range of a discussion, not just for one person or one industry. So I'm kind of a broad-based futurist who's looking for ways of thinking about the future and then specific information that can be fed into those processes.
So I can imagine that on the day you were born, your mother said, Joel's going to be a futurist. And your dad said, "Oh, no, I want him to make a living."
Actually, I wanted to be an astronaut when I was 5 years old, and that's what got me all started in it.
I got you. So how do you feed the pipeline? Now, you said you read 80-something publications, but
yep.
But what gets into your pipeline that comes out the other end as a prediction or something that we can use for the future?
Well, in fact, today I brought along some things to talk about to illustrate that, and also I think just to kind of trigger our audiences. Capacity to explore. And Jim, as we've been doing this, I've been sending you website locations for these
yep.
conversations too, so I'll do that at the end of today, and
okay.
People can follow up. But the one that I wanted to start with today was one that illustrates kind of this position about offshoring jobs. And Industry Week is one of the magazines I read, and there was a guy named Jory, J-O-R-Y, Gromer, who works for Green Bay Packaging in Chickasha, Oklahoma, I think it's pronounced, Chickasha. You know, he wrote the following. They're talking about buying corrugated fiberboard from offshore and that it really didn't make any difference because it was cheap. And he wrote this little piece that I just want to read to the audience because I want them to hear how we have, this is the way a futurist thinks. He's done a great job. He said, I very much appreciated your editorial on this fiberboard thing. Here are some other considerations. I'm in the corrugated fiberboard shipping container business, and this is how trees become boxes. Trees must be grown and harvested.
Hold on, Joel, hold on to that thought. Unfortunately, we've come to one of those ways that I make a living. So hold on to that thought. We're going to let you pick up on that story right after these messages, folks. Okay. You don't want to miss this. This is what, in the business, folks, this is what we call a cliffhanger. 20 till. Right back with our good friend Joel Barker. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Hey, Jim. This is Ray Keating, Chief Economist with the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council. Wow, 10 years as a small business advocate. Congratulations. You ask the right questions, provide great insights, and have a true passion for small business. How much do I get paid for saying all of this again?
I ain't got no.
We're back at 17-10. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for hanging around with us. I know you're glad you do. You're doing it because Joel Barker is in the building, so to speak. Joel is the author of his new book. It's called Five Regions of the Future. But I still encourage you to find the paradigm book. And if you can find it in paperback, don't worry about it. That's fine, too. That's the paperback version. Future Edge was the hardback version, but it came out in paperback called Paradigms. And it's about the business of paradigms. And there's a video out there, too, that I encourage you. If you get a chance to watch that, it's a fun video, and it will change your life. You know, Joel, after all these years, after 20 years probably just about since you did that, though, I think that message from Paradigms can still change people's lives.
It is interesting because it's been in continuous print since 1989. And in fact, I'm going to do an upgrade on it for the 20th anniversary.
Good for
you. It pleases me that I still get letters from people all over the world because it's translated into 20 languages.
Well, so, I expect you to launch that 20th edition on the show.
What a good idea, Joe.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have these every once in a while. Okay, yeah. We got a guy in Oklahoma who's in the in the corrugated box business.
Yes.
And what's his story?
Well, he just wrote this letter, and I just want to read. I just want the audience to watch this cascade, okay? So he's saying trees are grown, and this is to make boxes. You start by growing trees and harvesting them. Logs must be transported to mills or chip plants. Chips are then transported to paper mills, along with the reclaimed fiber for conversion on rolls of paper that are then transported to box plants. Box plants convert rolls of paper into sheets of box board, and then convert the box board into shipping containers for point of sale and containers. His point is, if you look all along that value chain, there are businesses that have invested millions and hundreds of millions of dollars to service that box. Mm-hmm. And those are all jobs that require lots of skill levels and good-paying jobs. And his point was, when you go and buy your corrugated box from another country, you may save a nickel, but the cost in terms of losing all those jobs is way past the small savings that you make primarily.
Right.
And the issue, I think, really comes down to here is we've got to think about the cascade of consequences better in the 21st century than we did in the 20th. And I think it's kind of a don't forget how everything is connected. And when you pull a piece of the connection out, you may be doing a lot more damage than you think you're doing.
Let me give you an example of that, not an outsourcing issue, but a cascading issue. When George Bush had only been in office about a year, he protected the steelworkers' pricing against foreign pricing.
Yeah.
He threw up a protectionist barrier that it was intended to protect our steelworkers, which protected about 200,000 steelworker jobs. But it hurt about 2 million jobs of people who work with steel in the United States.
Yep. And that's that understanding the cascade of consequences. Because what you really want to do is cause as little long-term damage as possible while you pick up as much long-term opportunity as you can. And that, again, is the way a futurist looks at it. And the reason I had that example is because that Jory did a good job of thinking like a futurist. It's not just one thing. It's a bunch of connected things that reach out into the future, and we want to understand that better.
But there are other, but and at the same time, there are cases where, and as I told you off the air, there's one case I know in particular where a guy went offshore to get his business started and found out, learned what it would take to do the project, the work that was being done offshore efficiently here in the United States. Had he not gone offshore to start with, he wouldn't have been able to have grown his business to where it is today and bring those jobs back to the United States. So offshore, you're not saying we shouldn't be global, we shouldn't be global marketers, we shouldn't be buying and selling globally. You're just saying make sure that it makes complete sense.
Yeah, and the other piece I put to that too is make sure that we look to see that we can't become more efficient here before we go offshore too. Yeah. That's the other side of it.
You're concerned about the innovation dearth that it could create.
Well, I am, because here's what I know from my own research. Innovation, a huge amount, well over 60% of all innovations are triggered through actual interaction with an event.
Right.
When all those jobs go offshore, all the event interactions go offshore too, and that means we're letting China or Korea or somebody else get the triggering event that makes them say, oh, we could do it this way.
But hasn't the global economy, the globalization effect, hasn't that caused the United States to ramp up its expertise in areas that a lot of other countries don't have the ability to do? Hasn't it really been a positive in a lot of ways as well?
I think certain places have really, because they want to be competitive, have done a good job at that. But I think there are other places where we, in fact, bailed to other nations when we could have kept the jobs here at home and dramatically improved our productivity and our innovation. So I think we got to work harder on saying there's certain things we want to keep home. I have a good friend, David Morris, who talks about localized economies, and he inverts one of Adam Smith's rules, which is when you see a lot of money pouring out to some other place, in other words, you're exporting a lot of money to buy something, you should be asking yourself, why can't I do that here? Instead of saying, oh, it's cheaper over there, so I should export it. He said, that's money going out, folks. You know, you ought to ask yourself, what could I do to keep it here?
Right. No, absolutely, and that's your and you're right. And not only does it cascade within that particular a commodity, but the cascading of the mind, seeing everybody else doing it, sometimes makes us believe that we should be doing it. When as you say, all we need to do is look at it a little closer. Maybe just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean that's what we should be doing. When we come back, we're going to tackle another futurist issue with our futurist, Joel Barker, right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Tintail, stay with us.
See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Joel Barker, is our guest. Joel, give us your website, please. Tell us where your book's available.
Well, you know, the book's available on Amazon. And other than that, you know, it got pulled from the bookstores because it didn't sell fast enough. So that's a beautiful thing about Amazon. You know, you and I talk about multiple accesses.
That's right.
Amazon says it'll always be available here, and so Amazon's the best place to go. And my website is up for construction, so I'm messing around with it here after Christmas, and then I'm going to bring it back up with some new stuff.
Well, we'll get you back on in January, and we'll get you to tell us about the new website. So check it out, folks. The new book is called 5 Regions of the Future or Anything that Joel Barker has written. If he scribbles something on a number 10 paper sack, you're going to want a copy of it. Joel, we got time for about one more of your thoughts for the future.
Well, I always bring
what about
along.
The battery? What about the battery thing?
Yeah, this is what.
Can we talk about? I like
exactly what you said. The company is called EESTOR, eStore. It's in Cedar Park, Texas. They have developed a paradigm shift in batteries. It's actually a battery. It's a battery capacitor. Now, most people don't know what a capacitor is, but a capacitor has the ability to push energy into it, electricity into it, and it holds it like it was inside a balloon until it needs to be released. It can release the energy very rapidly, and it can fill up in like 3 minutes. And this battery that they've developed is going to weigh about 100 pounds, which is not much more than a gas tank full of gas. will be able to produce as many as more than 300 kilometers worth of electricity for a car, and it can be refilled in 3 minutes.
Hmm.
Now, you don't think that
is... Wow. An electric battery that can be recharged in 3 minutes?
And it's really a capacitor. So I'm going to send you the website so you can read about it. But this is, and by the
way,
it's
not a battery, it's a capacitor.
Yeah, and it's made out of barium nitrate, which was called a mystery material because nobody believed it could do what it did. They're going to be delivering the products to Zen Motors in Toronto, who builds electric cars. They're going to start delivering the product in January.
Holy mackerel.
By the way,
let me correct you on something. Yep. Gasoline weighs 6 pounds to the gallon.
No kidding.
So 20 gallons of gas is 120 gallons. 120
right.
pounds.
It's heavier than water, then.
This is lighter
than that. Yep.
Yeah. So it'd be lighter. 100 pounds would be
gasoline.
Lighter than that.
Yeah, though the one thing with gasoline is it gets lighter because you burn it out. But still, who wants to do that? This produces no pollution at the vehicle source. You know, the power plants you still got to deal with.
All right, what's the negative? There's got to be a negative. It costs $1 million a unit, right?
No, actually, they are going to be able to roll it out very, you know, well within the cost parameters of a standard automobile. That's what's so breathtaking about it.
What about the way it performs? I mean, you know, how us Americans are. We like for our cars to go.
It's all, you know, that's the size of your electric motor, Jim. It's not about the battery. The beauty of it is a battery can squirt out as much electricity as you want as fast as you want.
Right, right.
So that, and then think about a refill. It takes you 3 minutes to fill up with the gas tank anyway.
How about that?
3 minutes, you got your electricity.
And what are you filling it up with, though?
Electricity. So that means you can also fill it up at your house at night in the garage with no special deals.
You know, one of the things we've reported with the Kiplinger editors, I do that show with them every week, is that if everybody had electric cars today, we wouldn't have enough electricity to support all that.
Well, you have to look at the
Our
first,
grid
the first
would be in big trouble.
Here's the number, really. The first 4 million electric cars, you don't need to add anything because you fill it up at night when the power plants are all dialed down.
Right.
So you have the infrastructure to charge 4 million cars every night without doing a single thing. So I say, let's head for the 4 million when we get close. All it is for the electrical companies is, what else can we do to build this?
Well, you know,
to service this.
A lot of people would think, who know me, would think I'd be the last guy to buy an electric car, but I'll tell you, Joel, I'm a prospect.
Yep. I think we all are. If it accelerates decently and it's a comfortable car, we're all interested. By the way, when you fill up with electricity, it's an equivalent of about 30 cents a gallon.
And, you know, this is one of the positive byproducts of higher gasoline prices.
It is.
This kind
exactly
of innovation.
Right. And Joel, pardon me,
isn't this one of the things that America should be leading the world in and not in corrugated boxes?
We have innovative. You need everything. You need the ecosystem. But I love it that we.
I'll buy my corrugated boxes from China as long as I can buy my capacitors from Oklahoma or wherever the heck they are.
Texas. All right. The oil state came through with the battery.
There you go. Hey, Joel. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Great talking to you, Jim.
Yeah. Take care, Joel Barker, ladies and gentlemen. Just one of the coolest guys you'll ever want to meet, and as you can tell. And be sure to check out his books, Five Regions of the Future, and don't forget the other one, the classic, Paradigms. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.